Usually when we talk about the tech industry, we picture this sort of ethereal cloud, right? Like everything is digital, it's all moving at the speed of light.
Right, yeah. The whole culture is built around avoiding anything as permanent as ink on paper. Move fast and break things, basically.
Exactly. The goal has always been to leave a little of a paper trail as physically possible.
But I mean, today we are stepping into a radically different reality.
Yeah, we really are. Because today is Wednesday, July 1st, 2026. And over the last week, that ethereal cloud just crashed headfirst into the filing cabinets of the American legal
It
system.
really did.
So we're doing a deep dive today, a real documentary-style investigation into a single monumental week in technology. And our guide for this is Conversational AI Watch, issue number 83.
Titled "The Documents Arrived."
The documents arrived, yeah. Because in the last few days, every single major player in the room, the federal government, the vendors, the courts, the states, they all finally stopped talking and just, put actual ink to paper.
And we are going to look at exactly what they wrote. Just to set the tone, this isn't about our opinions today. It's really about the documents, the actors, the paper trails. We're just laying out the timeline so you, the listener, can kind of act as the jury here.
I love that. So let's start with the federal government because the contradiction that played out in Washington this week is honestly just wild.
Oh, it's incredible.
So Monday, June 29, the U.S. House passes this massive omnibus bill called the KIDS Act, H.R. 7, last 5-5-7, wide margin 267 to 117. But tucked inside that package is this highly specific piece of legislation called the Safe Bay-Oats Act.
Authored by Representative Aaron Hochin out of Indiana. And this is a milestone document. It's the first federal chatbot for minors floor vote in American history.
Wait, the first one?
Yeah,
Wow.
the very first. It mandates that providers have to clearly disclose they aren't real people to any user under 18. But the big thing, it strictly forbids a chatbot from claiming to be a licensed professional.
Right, so a bot can't say, I am a therapist or I'm a doctor to a kid.
Exactly. And it legally mandates that if a minor brings up self-harm, the system has to immediately route them to a human crisis hotline.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. So Congress officially votes to make it federally illegal for bots to give fake crisis therapy to kids. Then, literally 24 hours later, Wired Magazine drops a bombshell spreadsheet.
A very detailed spreadsheet. 3,748 rows of receipts, to be exact.
Yeah, and it proves the tech industry was already weaponizing that exact scenario.
Oh, yeah. The document proved that Meta hired an outside contracting firm called Covalin. This was for an internal project codenamed Project Can.
Project Can.
Right. And Meta paid these contractors for 8 months to essentially run a massive red teaming operation. Adult contractors creating dummy accounts, posing as vulnerable minors under 18, and just running thousands of crisis prompts through rival chatbots.
Rival chatbots, not Meta's own bots, right? We're talking about OpenAI's ChatGPT, Google's Gemini, Character.ai.
Yes. And the scale of the operation is staggering. I mean, a single round of testing in August 2025 alone, these adults sent more than 45,000 individual prompts to those competitors.
Wow, 45,000.
And hundreds of those were dealing with highly sensitive topics, suicide, eating disorders. The contractors were uploading images of pills, knives, nooses.
Oh my God.
They were actively trying to provoke a dangerous response from the AI. And the wildest part is that OpenAI, Google, Character, none of them had any idea this coordinated attack was happening on their servers.
So in the exact same 48-hour window that Congress passes a law outlawing bots from giving fake crisis therapy to kids, we get a leaked spreadsheet proving a Fortune 100 company was paying adults to pretend to be suicidal kids
Yep.
just to force rival bots into giving fake crisis therapy.
It is a profound juxtaposition. Meta, they defended the project. They called it a responsible industry standard practice to test safety boundaries.
Of course they did.
They were basically trying to price the safety gap between their open source products and their competitors' closed systems. But if we look at the timeline, the legal implications are massive.
Why? Because of the new law.
Exactly. The enforcement predicate for that brand new federal law just arrived on a silver platter. The statute gives the FTC the legal hook, and Meta's spreadsheet just handed them a documented multi-month pattern of abuse.
It's like Congress said, you can't do this, and the next day Meta accidentally published a diary proving exactly how easily it can be done.
Right.
But here's the thing that gets me. Congress just essentially classified chatbots as consumer products, right? Products that have to meet specific safety features. But if you walk over to the federal courts right now, the tech companies are telling a completely different story.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Which takes us straight to the Northern District of Illinois.
Yeah.
Sitting in front of Judge John F. Ness is a case that could redefine the whole industry. Nippon Life Insurance Company of America v. OpenAI.
Okay, let's break down what happened here, because the facts of this case sound like a bad sitcom plot, but the legal defense is deadly serious.
Yeah, so Nippon Life is suing because of a pro se litigant. That's a person representing themselves without a lawyer. This individual used ChatGPT to draft 44 different post-settlement legal filings.
44.
44. And the problem is that ChatGPT hallucinated. One of those filings included a totally fabricated case citation, a completely fake legal precedent.
Wow.
So Nippon Life is suing OpenAI for tortious interference, basically saying OpenAI actively disrupted their legal process and for the unauthorized practice of law under the Illinois attorney statute.
Hold on, tortious interference. So in plain English, they're saying because the AI wrote a fake legal document, OpenAI actively messed with their business. How is OpenAI even defending that?
Well, the defense is the most important document in this docket.
Yeah.
OpenAI filed a motion to dismiss, and their core argument is that ChatGPT is mathematically incapable of practicing law.
Mathematically incapable.
Right. Because they claim it is a, quote, mere tool. They're arguing to Judge Ness that ChatGPT is not a person, it's not an actor, it's not a specialized product, it's just a statistical engine predicting the next word based on training data.
So they're claiming it's just a really fancy autocorrect. That's the defense.
Basically. They're saying providing a general tool to millions of people isn't aiding the unauthorized practice of law any more than Microsoft Word is responsible for a bad contract.
Right. But then we look at the companion cases that landed in this exact same news cycle, and the sheer scale of the liability makes that autocorrect defense feel completely inadequate.
Yeah. Let's look at the three other major dockets that just dropped. First, you have Baltimore v. X Corp and XAI. This is the first time a major municipality has taken action against a conversational AI.
Over the deepfakes, right?
Yes. Baltimore is suing under their Consumer Protection Ordinance because between December 2025 and January 2026, the Grok AI model allegedly generated up to 3 million sexualized images.
3 million?
And roughly 23,000 of those are alleged to depict children.
God. And then there's the labor case out of Santa Clara County, Devin Kim v. XAI.
Right. Devin Kim was a safety engineer at XAI, suing for retaliation. He says he was fired just days before he was supposed to present critical safety recommendations to leadership.
And there's a crazy quote in that complaint, right?
The deeply chilling quote.
He
attributed to former co-founder Jimmy Batt, who allegedly told the team, AI will kill us all anyway, as a justification for ignoring safety protocols.
AI will kill us all anyway. Just... wow. And finally, there is the Florida case, Vandana Joshi v. OpenAI, which is just incredibly tragic.
It is. Vandana Joshi is a Florida widow. She's suing because the man who murdered her husband at the FSU student union allegedly used ChatGPT to meticulously plan the attack.
To plan a mass shooter.
Yes. The complaint documents over 16,000 interactions across 18 months. The shooter asked the AI about the most effective weapons, the right ammunition, the optimal time and place on the FSU campus to inflict the most casualties. She's suing for negligence.
I mean, if it's just an autocomplete tool like OpenAI is claiming in Chicago, how can Baltimore sue it for consumer protection or a widow sue it for negligence in a mass shooting?
That's a contradiction.
It feels like the tech industry wants the profits of an independent actor, but the legal immunity of a hammer.
And that's the exact question sitting on the federal bench right now. Is a chatbot a person, a product, or a tool? If Judge Ness decides that the unauthorized practice of law count survives, if he rules ChatGPT is more than just a dumb tool, every single state disciplinary and medical board in the country suddenly gets a massive federal precedent.
They can start regulating AI outputs.
Exactly.
Okay, so while the judicial branch takes years to slowly debate whether AI is a tool or an actor, the executive branch just proved it can act in a matter of hours, and the timeline on this next document is just, it's incredible.
We are talking about the 19 dark days of Anthropic's Claude Fable 5.
The 19 dark days.
Right. So Anthropic launches this frontier model, Fable 5, on June 9. It's highly anticipated. But just 3 days later, on June 12, at 5:21 p.m. Eastern, Anthropic receives an emergency directive directly from the U.S. Department of Commerce.
Wait, what triggered it?
Amazon researchers had reported a severe jailbreak.
Hold on. I need you to explain that for me. What exactly is a jailbreak in this context? Like, are they hacking into the servers?
No. It's not a traditional hack. A jailbreaking conversational AI is a prompt injection. It's when a user feeds the AI a complex riddle or a hypothetical scenario designed to trick the model into ignoring its own safety guardrails.
Oh, okay.
In this case, the Amazon team tricked Fable 5 into not only identifying software vulnerabilities, but actually producing functional, malicious exploit code.
Wow.
So based on a national security finding regarding that code, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick ordered the model dark for every foreign national. And Anthropic didn't fight it. They killed the model that same evening.
Shut down in a matter of hours. And then today, July 1st, Anthropic restores it globally. But the way they restored it is what's really turning heads across the industry.
What's fascinating here is the total absence of traditional administrative process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no Federal Register rulemaking.
No public comment, period.
Nope. No congressional hearings. A cabinet secretary reached into a production consumer model, flipped the kill switch on a Friday afternoon, and then 19 days later lifted the order based on nothing more than a private compliance letter and a social media post.
It's a document without a docket.
Exactly. The private letter details that Anthropic agreed to proactively detect risks and report any malicious activity directly to the government. The AI vendor has essentially become a real-time policy instrument for the state.
And it gets even more intense, because in just 8 days, on July 8, Anthropic is rolling out a brand new policy for users who get flagged by their system.
Yeah, this is huge.
If your account gets flagged for suspicious prompts, you don't just get a warning email anymore. You have to hand over a government-issued photo ID, a live selfie, and a facial geometry template.
And they're handing all of this biometric data collection over to a third-party company called Persona Identities. Anthropic openly acknowledges in their terms that this template may be considered highly regulated biometric data under various global jurisdictions.
Look, nothing lowers my heart rate when I'm looking for AI help, quite like being asked for my exact facial geometry, right? Sorry you're stressed. Please stare unblinkingly into this biometric scanner.
Right, yeah.
But think about this pivot for a second. The government proves they hold an afternoon kill switch for frontier AI models. And the very next week, the AI vendor suddenly starts acting like a biometric border guard, demanding the actual geometry of your face just to use a chatbot.
Well, it forces every founder and investor listening to this to completely recalculate their risk. I mean, if you're building an app on top of Anthropic's model, your uptime isn't just about server capacity anymore. It's about whether a cabinet secretary gets a bad security report.
And your compliance involves navigating aggressive privacy laws now.
Exactly, like the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act.
Which brings us to the states. Because the federal response right now is this weird, contradictory mix. You've got slow court battles about autocomplete and then opaque, lightning-fast executive kill switches. But to remember that House bill from the very beginning, the KIDS Act.
Yes, H.R. 7757.
Right. It explicitly refused to preempt stricter state laws. It has what's called a conflicts-based preemption clause.
Which means the federal government left the door wide open, and the states are realizing they're completely on their own, so they are rushing in to fill the void.
New York just decided they aren't waiting for Congress to figure it out. Let's look at Senate Bill 9051B.
This bill passed the New York Senate unanimously and the Assembly unanimously. You couldn't find a single politician in the state willing to vote against it. It's currently sitting on Governor Kathy Hochul's desk, waiting for her signature.
What exactly does it outlaw?
It specifically targets AI companionship chatbots marketed to minors. If a chatbot simulates emotional attachment, if it misrepresents itself as non-human, or generates self-harm or sexually explicit content for users under 18, the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, can enforce a civil penalty of up to $25,000 per individual violation.
$25,000 per violation. I mean, if you have a user base of even a few thousand teenagers in New York, that is a company-ending number.
It really is.
But Rhode Island went even further, right? They didn't just fine the behavior, they banned the concept.
Much further, yeah. On June 22, Rhode Island Governor Dan McKee signed a sweeping three-bill package. Two of those bills constitute the nation's first outright ban on AI delivering psychotherapy.
Wait, an outright ban?
Yes. The text explicitly prohibits any business from offering therapy or psychotherapy to a Rhode Island resident, unless that therapy is conducted by a human licensed provider. And the statute specifically names conversational AI products marketed for mental health support.
So you cannot offer an AI therapist in Rhode Island. Period.
Correct. They also passed a strict crisis protocol statute with a $15,000 per day fine for non-compliance. And interestingly, they passed an ambient AI scribe statute.
Oh, explain AI scribe thing.
Think of it like a smart speaker sitting on your doctor's desk. It listens to the natural conversation between you and your doctor and automatically writes the clinical notes and billing codes. The new Rhode Island law requires doctors to explicitly disclose to the patient if they're using one of these listening devices during a visit.
We are literally watching the balkanization of AI in real time. If you're a software founder shipping your product into Providence, Rhode Island, now it requires a fundamentally different architecture, different consent flows, and a different legal defense than shipping it into Texas or New York.
Exactly. Rhode Island just made the argument that AI isn't practicing medicine legally void for its residents.
Right. The federal chamber passed a baseline bill, but the ceiling on your civil penalty and the actual boundaries of what your product is allowed to do are now being dictated by Albany and Providence.
The debate over whether states will regulate AI is over. They already are.
Well, and Rhode Island slamming the door on AI therapy without a human license forces a much darker, much more intimate question. What exactly is inside the brains of the mental health bots that are already out there?
This is where we look at an incredible investigative report published by Endpoints News this week. They dug into the provenance, the exact origins of the training data used by mental health chatbots. They looked at four major vendors and found a deep, fundamental split in how they build their models.
So on one side of the split, you have companies using RealData, Talkspace, and Lyra Health.
Yes, they're training their language models on real de-identified therapy transcripts. On June 9, Talkspace actually announced a fine-tuned model called T, which they heavily market as the first safe AI agent for daily mental health support.
Okay.
And Lyra Health confirmed back in 2025 that their clinical-grade AI uses transcripts drawn directly from their own human coaches and therapists.
Wait, let me make sure I understand this. They take actual heartbreaking therapy sessions, real human beings pouring their hearts out about their trauma. They scrub the names off the text and they feed it into the machine to teach it how to sound empathetic.
That's right. The consent surface for that data collection is usually a dense terms of service page hidden deep inside a corporate benefits portal. Most patients have no idea.
Wow.
But on the other side of the split, you have companies like Headspace and Jiminy Health. They train their models, like Jiminy's behavioral health assistant, Sage on synthetic data.
I'm stuck on this synthetic data idea. How does an AI hallucinate a therapy session? Is it just talking to itself in a server farm?
Essentially, yes. They use massive large language models to role play. They instruct one AI to act like a patient with severe depression and another AI to act like a therapist. They generate millions of these fake therapy conversations at lightning speed and then train their consumer chatbot on those simulated interactions.
So these are detailed emotional conversations that never actually happened between real human beings.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because it's like training a self-driving car entirely in a video game. It works perfectly in the simulation, but what happens when a real-world pedestrian steps off the curb?
Right.
I mean, put yourself in that position for a second, which makes you more uncomfortable. Chatting with an AI trained on a real person's deepest, most vulnerable trauma, or chatting with an AI trained on a hallucinated mental breakdown generated by a server farm.
It is a profound ethical dilemma. And Limbic Limited, a UK-based company, is serving as the voice of caution in that Endpoints report. Limbic is unique because they are the only mental health AI chatbot carrying a Class DIA medical device certification from the United Kingdom.
Which means they had to prove it's actually safe, not just a toy.
Exactly. It requires rigorous clinical risk management processes. And Limbic is actively warning about the safety risks on both sides of this line. On one side, you have the privacy risks of using real human data. On the other side, you have the fidelity risks of synthetic data. The danger that the AI only learns a cartoonish, superficial version of human psychology because it's only learning from itself.
Because that Federal Safe Bots Act we talked about specifies what a bot cannot say to a child, but it completely ignores whose therapy session was used to teach the bot how to speak in the first place.
Exactly. And for clinicians, this training data document changes the entire concept of informed consent. If your client is using a mental health app between sessions, you now have to ask them, are you talking to a model trained on transcripts other patients unknowingly gave up? Or are you talking to a model trained on synthetic hallucinations?
You have to know the product.
You have to ask which specific product they use before you even ask about their symptoms.
Wow. So with Congress, the courts, cabinet secretaries, and state governors all drawing different lines in the sand, how does a human doctor actually handle the reality of an AI sitting in the room with them?
And this brings us to the final document of the week. A book publishing today on Amazon called Therapist in the Loop by Jess Jessup.
And we need to make a very clear disclosure right up front here.
We do. Jess Jessup is the founder and CEO of Clinician Assist, Inc., which is the company building an AI mental health platform called Casey. But crucially for our purposes, Jessup is also the author of the Conversational AI Watch newsletter that serves as the source material for this entire deep dive today.
So the person chronicling this monumental week in tech is also actively building the software trying to navigate it.
Yes, and that builder's perspective is exactly why the book matters. Unlike academics or ethicists who are just observing the chaos from the outside, this is written by someone who actually has to write the safety rules into a shipping product today.
Makes sense.
The book introduces a framework called the triad, the idea that there are no longer two parties in the therapy room. There are three: the client, the therapist, and the machine.
It's a crowded room.
Right. And inside that triad are the six laws of CATE, which stands for Clinician-Assisted In-Loop Therapy. These laws are meticulously designed to keep the human clinician legally and clinically on the hook for the outcome.
Which is a huge shift.
Oh, it's a direct rebuttal to tech vendors who try to sell fully autonomous AI therapists while dodging the liability. The framework covers informed consent, strict attribution of clinical decisions, maintaining audit trails, and protocols for escalating to a human.
It's basically the vocabulary for the era we just entered.
Precisely. Whether you're a software founder drafting a model card, an insurance executive building reimbursement policy, or opposing counsel in a malpractice suit, this framework provides the plain English standard of care. Everyone will be quoting it within 18 months to figure out exactly who is responsible when the machine makes a mistake.
Over the last week, as our source material notes, nobody in the AI ecosystem wrote silence. I mean, the federal chamber voted to ban fake bot therapists. The meta contractors logged their 45,000 crisis tests. The plaintiff bar filed their massive liability suits. Anthropic signed their private compliance letters. The state legislatures passed their fines. And the tech press published their investigations into the training data. The era of moving fast and breaking things has been officially replaced by the era of compliance, litigation, and state-by-state regulation.
The documents arrived, and they're going to define the boundaries of conversational AI for the next decade.
I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. If a company like Talkspace or Lyra trains its AI on real therapy transcripts, and that AI is eventually sued in a federal court under the same consumer protection laws we saw in the Baltimore case, what happens during discovery?
Yeah.
What happens when a federal judge subpoenas the AI's training data? Are we heading toward a future where our most private, de-identified therapy sessions become public exhibits in a massive class action lawsuit?
It is a reality the tech industry hasn't fully priced in yet.
So, looking at the avalanche of paper that just dropped on the industry, which of these documents will you be keeping on your desk this week?